Welcome to what I believe is now the 17th episode of Practical Azure, and we're actually only about halfway done. My name is Jim O'Neill, a technology evangelist in the Boston area, and today we're going to talk about identity. Identity is more of a concept than a feature, and it's somewhat of a squishy one. If you've been around Windows Azure for a while, you might have heard of the Windows Azure App Fabric, and within that you might recall the Windows Azure Access Control Service. Those are the roots of what is a continually evolving story for managing user identity in the context of software as a service. As for branding specifically, you'll now see Windows Azure Active Directory as the service that implements identity management and access control for your cloud applications. Now, the topic of identity in general is a pretty deep one, and when you layer on top of that implementation stacks like Windows Azure Active Directory, Windows Identity Foundation, OAuth, and more, there's quite a lot to talk about, and a lot more than I can fit into the 10 to 15 minutes that we set as a goal for each episode of this series. So as a result, what follows is really just an introduction to the core concepts, the tip of the iceberg, and we'll do a couple of high-level demos to touch on the services that Windows Azure does provide. So with that expectation set, let's take a look at some of the core concepts that do underlie identity management. On this slide, you can see perhaps your application on the right. Let's say it's hosted in a public cloud like Windows Azure, and on the left are your users. Between the two, of course, is some sort of gate. Unless your application is completely open, you're not going to grant access to just anyone. And even if the application is completely free and open, it's likely you'll want to customize it a bit for each user to his own preferences, provide suggestions based on their past activity, and so on. Bottom line, you need to know who your users are, and you need to authenticate them. Now, one option that's quite familiar to ASP.NET users and developers is to maintain an ASP.NET membership database, perhaps using Windows Azure SQL Database. The application can check if a user's been authenticated and then prompt for a login or a password via a registration page. With ASP.NET membership, you can also assign roles to users, which would authorize them to perform some operations in your app, but maybe not others. That works and has been working for quite a long time, but it's a little unwieldy, particularly when you look at the scale and the transient nature of users on the web. Do you really want to be in the business of managing identity for thousands or millions of users? And as a user, do you even bother signing up for websites anymore, having to maintain and manage another password? It's painful for us as users, and it's painful for you as an application developer, because it's yet another thing you have to do that really isn't focused on the business value of the application. So how do we solve all that? Well, you can outsource your authentication. By now, we're all quite used to leveraging Twitter, Facebook, OpenID, and so on to gain access to a myriad of additional services that really have nothing to do with Facebook or Twitter. Through protocols like OAuth and SAMLP and WS Federation, your application, which is now termed a relying party, can enter into a trust arrangement with providers like Facebook and Twitter. And assuming your application trusts Facebook and the user allows Facebook to share information with your application, your user gets granted access to the app and all is well. Your user is vouched for, and that's pretty much what you cared about. I say pretty much because the fact that the user has a Facebook ID doesn't really give them carte blanche to your application. You now want to authorize them to do various activities on your site, and you need to authorize them based on some attribute of their identity. So think about how the Department of Motor Vehicles works. They issue a driver's license to you, and in this case, they're actually the identity provider. If you go to a bar, the bar will accept the license as valid because they trust the DMV, but they also check your date of birth to see if you're authorized to buy that beer. That date of birth, in this case, is a claim. It's a statement of fact about the identity that the relying party, the bartender in this case, will trust because it came from a trusted identity, provider, namely the DMV. Now that claim is just a simple statement of fact. It's a birth date. The authorization really comes in by interpreting that fact into a rule, like calculating how old you are based on the birth date, and either denying or allowing an action to occur. So you either get to buy that beer, or in the case of an application, you get to run that certain method in the web service. These identity providers don't know what the functionality of your application is, though. They don't know that you have to be a manager to authorize expense reports or that you have to have 10 years of service to get that gold watch. So in many cases, the claims that an identity service provides needs to be morphed into a claim that has meaning and context to the application itself. And in some cases, you need to augment the claims that come from the identity provider to provide that information to the relying party application. That's where the security token service comes in. And this is what Windows Azure Access Control Service is, and you see that in the bottom right of the screen here. It's responsible for negotiating the transfer and the translation of claims from an identity provider, like Facebook or Twitter, into claims that your application can make use of. So let's take a brief look of how all this works in a pretty short demo. So for the simple demo with the Access Control Service, what I've done is set up a simple MVC application. It's a simple one-page app, and let me go ahead and just run it for you here right quick. What the application does is just report on who the current user is. The application right now doesn't authenticate you against any kind of identity provider, so it's essentially just an anonymous login. And I'm going to copy the URL here because I'm going to need that in just a moment. If you look at the implementation behind this, we're actually making use of thread.currentprinciple.identity, which will store all of the claims that are actually going to come from the identity provider. This is part of the Windows Identity Framework, and it's something that's actually baked into .NET 4.5 at this point, which makes it that much easier to use. So in order to set up this relationship with the identity providers, what I'm going to do is go into my Windows Azure portal, and we're going to create a new access control namespace. So to do so, I'm going to go into New and hit Access Control, click Create, and we're going to create a namespace that will sit inside of the Windows Azure infrastructure, and we'll just call it Identity 1, and it'll be .accesscontrol.windows.net. And then we'll set the region to East Coast, because that's where I want my stuff to sit, and I'll go ahead and hit Create to create that, that new namespace. This can take about a minute or so. What it's actually doing is, again, setting up some DNS servers and provisioning some assets for me inside of the Windows Azure Cloud. So now that the namespace has been created, we can go ahead and manage that particular namespace. Now, when I manage the namespace, what's happening is I'm actually getting pushed into what we call the older portal underneath of Windows Azure. And within that portal, what I can do is create the identity providers that are going to be associated with this namespace. These are essentially the identity providers that I want to use to authenticate people to my website. By default, Windows Azure Live on Windows Azure, Windows Live ID is there, and I can add a few more. So let's just add Google. So we'll hit Next, and it's asking me for how do I want Google to appear when I ask the user how they want to authenticate, and using the word Google seems pretty reasonable to me, so we'll just hit Save on that. So now what we've defined is who we're going to let identify the users coming into my app. The next thing we need to do is we need to identify the app itself. So your application at this point is what's considered a relying party. So this is my test app, so we'll just call it my test app. So this is the ASP.NET application that I was running a little bit earlier. And I need to tell it where it is. And what I can do is actually use the localhost URL here because we're just doing a demo. Typically what would happen is this would be the endpoint of your application either on premises or sitting inside of a Windows Azure web role, for instance. So I'll add the realm and the return URL where that application comes back to once it's been authenticated. There's some token format, so there's a lot of stuff going on under the covers where you can sort of manage how that authentication is going, what kind of encryption there is, and those types of things, how long the token, the identity token is live for, and so on. It'll leave all those at the default at this point. You can certainly read more about that. And we're going to hit Save. So at this point, my application is essentially tied into Identity 1 as an access control service endpoint. Now the next thing I want to do with the application is basically create what are called rule groups. And by default, some rule groups have already been set up for me. And what a rule group is essentially a set of claims that are going to be sent down from whatever identity provider you talk to. So a default rule group has been provided, but it's not set up to actually have your application accept any claims from the user or from the identity provider. So in the bartender case, I've provided the ID, but the bartender has no idea what piece of information to read off of that ID, that the birth date is the important piece of information. So I'm going to generate essentially default claims. So when I generate these default rules, I'm going to get some of the claims that Google and Windows Live ID provide to a application that's requesting them. So Google provides an email address, a name, and something called a name identifier, which is somewhat of an opaque unique ID for each user. Each claim in turn, and we're not going to make a lot of changes here though, but each claim in turn can essentially go through a transformation. So it's kind of like a set of if-then rules. So if the email address has the gmail.com domain in it, then I can basically say that this person has this type of access to my service. I can create new types of output claims, or I can leverage some well-known claims as you see here. So I can essentially transfer what's coming from either Google or Windows Live ID into something that my application knows about and is meaningful to the application. Now, in most of the demos, you'll just see us do these pass-throughs, so I'm going to get the claims right back down to the application just as they came from Google or Live ID. So with that set up, I actually have everything I need in place. What I need to do now is go back to my application, my relying party application, that ASP.NET application, right, and tell it that I've hooked all this stuff up into the in the cloud. So the ASP.NET application, in order to add that last bit there, what I need to do is talk to this service from within Visual Studio. And in order to do that, I'm going to need essentially a key. So it's a management key so that they can exchange these credentials. So I'm going to copy that from my access control endpoint. And then we're going to go back into Visual Studio. And here's where the magic happens. So in Visual Studio, with the Identity and Access plugin that's part of Visual Studio, you can get this from essentially installing the extension inside of Visual Studio. This walks you through all of the nitty-gritty process of doing this configuration. So what I'm going to do here is basically say I want to use the Windows Azure Access Control Service, and it's asking me, I'm not actually sure why it's telling me this. Okay, I used this as a previous demo, and it's remembering Identity 1, but the credentials have changed. So what I'm going to do is go back and change the credentials for that namespace that I just copied. And it's all happy now. And as you can see, it's sort of poked into that namespace and has found that I was going to use Live ID in Google, and this is the endpoint for the application. So it already knows all that stuff. In previous incantations of this dance, you had to do a lot of stuff yourself and a lot of copying and pasting in various web configs and so on. That's all happening for you now automatically, which is great. So now if I hit OK here and we run in Internet Explorer again, we should get a different experience. So now what's happening is because I've engaged this authentication piece, it's going off to the identity access control service and basically saying, well, you've got two choices to log in, Live ID or Google. And if I go Live ID, for instance, it's going to ask me for my Live ID credentials through a page that's very familiar to us that use Live ID or now Microsoft account. And I can log in here, assuming I got my password right. You'll notice that it's now populating some of the information from that current principal. It knows that I'm authenticated. Oddly, it doesn't actually have a name here, but if you look at the claims that Windows Live ID provides, it really only provides one piece of information, and that's this thing called this name identifier, which is, again, a very opaque value. From Live ID, I can't actually directly get the fact that my name is Jim O'Neill. That's a piece of information that's considered private to Windows Live ID, and if I wanted to get that information, I'd have to go through essentially another API. Now, if I want to try the same thing with Google, let me just copy and paste that same URL here into a new IE session. So we're the same authentication. Now let's go through Google, and I have a different ID here. Let's see what happens here. So now here Google's actually saying, hey, this guy wants access to some more information. They want access to actually your email address. Do you trust this application to do so? And of course I trust myself, so I'm going to say okay. And now you can see that Google is actually returning me a little bit more information. My name is here, and I actually have an email address as well. There's the name, and of course it says it came from Google. So depending on the identity provider, you may get additional information that you can then use inside of your application. In both cases, you have a name identifier. It's typically the name identifier that you're going to use and store as part of your application to tie it to interesting things that that user has done in your app. So preferences and that sort of thing would be tied to that unique ID. And then every time they log in through Google, you can sort of bring up their browsing history or their preferences or whatever and customize the experience for that particular user. So let's go back to the slides a bit and talk about the next subject. So what I just showed you in this last demo was the underpinnings of simple access control. When you start talking about enterprise scenarios, you start entering the world of directories like Active Directory or LDAP, where you're maintaining not only identities but also relationships, managerial hierarchies, reporting chains, and the like. And that's where Windows Azure Active Directory comes in. So to show you a little bit about how Windows Azure Active Directory works inside of the cloud, I'm going to log into an Active Directory tenant that I've already provisioned, and you can provision one free at the moment. It's in a preview mode, and there is a portal at essentially activedirectory.windowsazure.com that you can do that with. When you provision an Active Directory tenant, you're going to get essentially a subdomain on the onmicrosoft.com domain. So my tenant is jimoneal.onmicrosoft.com, and I have a user ID set up for that as well. So let me go ahead and sign in, and let's take a look and see what kind of functionality is available there. So what you're going to get is essentially the Active Directory experience hosted inside the cloud. In this case, I have already set up another user called me at jimoneal.onmicrosoft.com. So I could use that user to authenticate to various different applications as well. Now, what I can do as well with Windows Azure Active Directory is I can set up some integration relationships. So if you're a small organization, you might not even have Active Directory on premises, and you're going to store everything up in the cloud, including the credentials. If you're a larger organization, you may want to project those users and those memberships and those types of relationships up into the cloud, but retain the actual credentials on premises. So what you can do is you can set up a directory sync so that makes the information inside of Active Directory available through all those protocols I showed you on the slide earlier, but it doesn't actually propagate those credentials up into the cloud for you. Another great feature of Windows Azure Active Directory is being able to essentially deploy single sign-on. So you can have a very streamlined experience between all the services that are running inside of your Windows Azure Active Directory, the cloud services and so on that you deploy to Windows Azure. So very, very, very powerful for specifically software as a service type applications and infrastructures that you might host inside of Windows Azure. So what I'm going to do is go back to the slides. We're going to wrap up a little bit on Windows Azure Active Directory, and then we'll get into some references to take you a little bit further. So back to the same slide I showed you right before that short demo. On the left, you'll see another interface called the Graph API. That represents a RESTful Graph API that allows you to traverse the attributes of the users and the organizational relationships within Active Directory from within your applications. So it's a REST-based API. That means an ASP.NET application or a Python application or a Node.js application or so on can essentially create RESTful calls against the Active Directory and get and glean more information from those relationships and use that as part of the application. Very, very powerful option for building really impressive software as a service type applications. Now, given that all this technology, the Windows Azure Active Directory and the tenants and so on is somewhat in preview mode, I'm going to stop here and then just refer you to some additional references for a deeper understanding of what all this means and an opportunity to sort of dive in a little bit deeper with your own demos and feature sets. It was actually a little tough narrowing down a good reference list because there's just so many different options out there and so many different ways to approach the identity issue. The first item that I have here below the account provisioning links is essentially the landing page on the Windows Azure site. And after that, there's a bunch of references across multiple different web properties that cover the primary topics we just chatted about. I do want to add one last note, though. This is a pretty rapidly evolving technology, and the abstraction layers that we're providing to make this easier for you are coming fast and furious. So when you do look at some of the materials that are available on the web, on MSDN, and so on, take a look at the date and take a look at how recent that information is. Otherwise, it can be kind of confusing because you're trying to walk through scenarios for which the developer experience has really drastically changed for the better, but it can be, again, kind of confusing as you're trying to learn about all these different features. Thanks for joining me for this overview of identity in Windows Azure. In the next episode, we'll shift one square left on our Azure feature map and talk about the service bus.